we got what it takes for the circle to break. Revolution lives in me.
Welcome to the Untamed and Unashamed podcast. I'm your host, Jade Bryce, and I am a certified love, intimacy, and relationship coach. I help women reconnect to their bodies and their pleasure, and I help men to become a safe space for that by becoming fully embodied leaders. The mission of this podcast is to expand our capacity in living untamed and unashamed. As we navigate life's ups and downs with all of the vulnerability, compassion, and openness that we can muster, and celebrating our bravery in all of it. Along with the help of guests from all walks of life, we'll discover new truths while doing some unlearning, and we'll gain valuable tools for becoming who we already are. So I invite you to open your heart and be untamed and unashamed. The first book that I read from today's guest was titled Your Brain on Love. And it was about the neurobiology of healthy relationships. And I learned so much about myself when it came to my relationship attachment style. And I think I was about 29 at the time. I'm going to be 39 next month. So it was about 10 years ago. And it was all really new information to me. And so I felt like I was just discovering so much about myself when it came to that relationship attachment style and what my needs were according to that style. Felt so empowering for me. And I then read Wired for Love, Relationship RX, and his most recent book, In Each Other's Care. When I read that first book about 10 years ago, I was on a bus while backpacking South America. And I would have never imagined that one day I'd have a podcast and I would be able to sit with him personally and ask him questions. This is such a blessing. And I'm so thankful for all of you who support the show through reviews and shares. It means so much. So hand to heart, thank you. I was really touched while reading his last book, In Each Other's Care, to feel that my partner and I already do a lot of what's in the book. It made me feel even more gratitude for my partner and my partnership. It's like he naturally knows how to keep me feeling like I'm in his care. I will say that I did not relate that way until I was with him. I felt safety with him to show up in that way because I could really feel his integrity. And there is a level of respect that comes with that. With all that said, even still, my anxious attachment can show up pretty strong at times. And so I'm so excited to talk to today's guest about how to become more of a secure attachment style. So our guest today is a clinician, researcher, teacher, and developer of a psychobiological approach for couples therapy, also known as PACT. He has a clinical practice in Calabasas, California, and developed the PACT Institute for the purpose of training other psychotherapists to use it. Please help me welcome Dr. Stan Tatkin to Untamed and Unashamed. Hi.
Hi, Jade. How are you?
I'm great. I was telling the listeners before you jumped on, when I first read your book, it was at least a decade ago, Your Brain on Love. I was backpacking across South America and I was reading it on a bus. And man, I had not had a healthy relationship yet. And I remember feeling while reading that book, like not only was I learning so much about myself and my attachment style and the ways that I needed to feel love and reassurance, but it really gave me hope to be able to relate in a healthy way. And coming from so much trauma where I never had that hope before, I didn't have that model for me, reading a book that really gave like practical tools. I mean, it really made me feel like, oh, I can do this. So your work is so powerful. And I'm so excited to share it with the listeners today, because I know that there's many people out there that don't feel like they had healthy models for relating. And books like yours are, for some, the first taste that they have of that. So
thank you. I'm so glad it helped you.
Yeah, it really has. And we'll get into a little bit more about my anxious attachment still tries to run the show a lot of the times, even though I've been deep in your work for about a decade. But maybe first, because I know that your recent book, In Each Other's Care, I have read that as well. And when we discuss that, we'll likely be describing secure attachment quite a bit. So maybe first we can go into what the attachment styles are and what it is to be securely attached.
Sure. Being securely attached can happen at any time in life. Mm-hmm. We study it mostly in infancy before about 10 to 18 months. And it's the felt sense of the infant, child, adolescent, adult, of feeling safe and secure with the person who is primary or the people who are primaries, starting with the originals, right? The caregivers. And that felt sense has to do with being able to feel there's a secure base to run to. I'm a toddler, I'm a baby, whatever. I could always go to my caregiver for emotional refueling. And I can also explore the non-caregiver world without terrible consequence, right? I can cling, I can distance. And either way, my caregiver is there and provides a secure base for me to go to and check in and to emotionally refuel. Mm-hmm. If I'm insecure, I either get stuck developmentally at the clinging side because of a certain parental style that I experience. We should remember that this is not a personality. This is an adaptation to one's environment, right? Mm-hmm. The multitudes of interactions that exist postnatally, rather. There's no research in prenatal, but postnatally. And those repeated experiences really help us in our bodies know how we're going to move toward and away from the most important people in our life, right? Mm-hmm. And so if I'm on the clinging side, I had a parent who was needy and needed emotional regulation themselves and really wanted me to be close and nearby and cute and cuddly and sweet and dependent and little, right? But also because I would cling, I would frustrate and overwhelm that parent who would alternately push me away and tell me, you know, play by myself and I'm getting on their nerves and so on like that. So I had this push me, pull you experience where I started to feel ambivalent, started to feel like I couldn't trust the caregiver and I wouldn't know what to do. So I would cling and I would wait for whether it was okay or not, right? Mm-hmm. And I'd get really kind of whiny and a complainy and so on like that. Well, you know, fast forward, I'm a wave. We call them waves in my book. Yeah. They're called differently. And in the research and literature, and I tend to be angry and resistant when I've reunited with someone I'm depending on. After separation, I tend to get very anxious with separations. I'm very sensitive to withdrawals, very sensitive to any signals that I'm not wanted, rejection, abandonment, anger, and punishment. And I tend to do those things myself. I tend to punish and get angry and push away. And so, I can be a handful, but really the attachment insecurity is a memory of what happens when I depend. It only happens when I depend on someone. Or I can be in the distancing group of insecures. I'm also anxious, by the way. I'm anxious about being smothered, being interfered with, being intruded upon because I was neglected a lot on an attachment level. I spent a lot of time alone and I adapted to it. And when you, caregiver, come in to be with me or to do something with me, I feel intruded upon. I feel annoyed, bothered, because the way I'm taking care of myself is fine now and you're interfering. Plus, I always feel it's for you. It's never for me. I feel like I'm being used a lot. So I feel that resentment. But I cannot complain. So I act compliant. And then I cannot wait until you leave so I can go back to playing and go back to what I normally do myself. In my family, my caretakers cared a lot about performance and appearance. So on both sides of the insecure spectrum, we have a culture that puts more emphasis on the self and less emphasis on relationship. So secure put more emphasis on the relationship and the self, but the relationship tends to come first. Mm-hmm. That's the difference, really. By the way, in the distance, and we call them islands, and these are the people who do all the distancing and the dismissiveness and so on. Yeah.
Yeah, I actually really appreciate that you call them islands and waves and anchors, because when you hear anxious, avoidant, and secure, obviously you're going to think that the secure is like, you kind of pedestal that one. And then if you're anxious or avoidant, you kind of want to, I'm not anxious, I'm not avoidant, because it doesn't feel good. But to say I'm a wave, right, especially as a woman, like I kind of feel a little bit more, and not that I do desire to move towards secure attachment, but there's so much less shame, I feel like, in people accepting their attachment style when we call them waves and islands instead of anxious and avoidant.
People should understand that to be an anchor or secure doesn't rule you out as being a pain in the ass. All human beings, this is really a human being issue. That's true. Not just an attachment issue. All human beings are difficult up close over time. There is no such thing as a low maintenance person over time up close. And so we're all difficult, irritating, annoying, and especially disappointing. We're all aggressive and moody and fickle and xenophobic and opportunistic and exploitive. That's the human animal. So lest we forget, we think somebody else is a pain because they're a wave. Look at thyself.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know when it comes to secure attachment, you talked about it beautifully and you know, what the insecure attachments are. And I remember something in your recent book, In Each Other's Care, about secure attachment that really stuck with me, was that a secure attachment relationship, they operate, and you said it as well, they operate as a two-person system who are in each other's care, especially when one is under stress. Yeah. Whereas, like you were saying, the insecure operate as like a one-person system, me, my, I, whereas maybe the anxious is a little bit more you, your, in a way.
My, I, and you, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when it comes to secure attachment and moving towards the two-person system, what are some ways that we can do that if we have always operated as a wave or an island or an insecure attachment?
Well, I think you're also referring to secure functioning. So secure mm-hmm. functioning, we're differentiating away from attachment. Secure mm-hmm. functioning is behaviors, a set of behaviors, or we could call them social contracts between you and I, of what we're going to do and what we're never going to do. Mm-hmm. It's our culture, our civilization. We develop our, so to speak, our Ten Commandments or our Constitution based on what we believe is fair, just, and mutually sensitive. Mm-hmm. So a two-person psychological system is one of interdependence, not codependence or dependency. Mm-hmm. You and I start off and continue to be equals, right? Shared power, shared authority. Both of us are bosses because we say so. We're both generals because we say so. We're both executives because we say so. And we're both leaders. We're in charge of everyone and everything. Therefore, everyone and everything depends on you and I working collaboratively and cooperatively with each other, always as allies, never as adversaries, because the adversaries are outside of our couple bubble. Mm-hmm. We're supposed to be allies always, right? And so we have to work that way, and we have to set up a structure to it to protect ourselves from each other. And those are our rules and guidelines, our principles by which we govern each other. And so that is everyone can do. You can't just make yourself secure, right? Secure anyway is something that is tested and imagined by researchers. Mm-hmm. Here we're talking about behaviors that are consistent with secure attachment and therefore lower interpersonal stress. Mm-hmm. And take threat off the table, and therefore freeing up resources. So you and I, if we're not secure, we become secure, right? Development moves forward now.
Yeah, that's so true. The relationship that I'm in now is, it is a very secure functioning relationship. It is the first relationship that I've been in where we actually do have a couple bubble, and we have these 90 minute team meetings every Sunday where we approach things, like you said, as a team, as equals. And I feel that more than ever, I have moved towards secure attachment just because of that safety and security. And And it's interesting because couple bubble, like that term used to actually scare me because it felt like, because I had been with so many abusers and manipulators, it felt like I wouldn't be safe in that bubble. And so it's really beautiful to experience it now in a secure functioning relationship. And when it comes to that safety, you write that our partner's safety is our responsibility. Can you share what that actually looks like in relationship?
In each other's care, and this is how this all began, it's a psychobiological idea that we are actually in each other's care because that's how we're wired up close. I can see what's going on in you before you can tell. You can see what's going on in me before I can tell. We're built for something called interactive regulation ever since we are born, right? Until the day we die. And so that is the best form of self-care is interactive regulation along with self-regulation. And so it is more efficient for me to guarantee your safety and security at all times because I can, right? I can, I'm your handler. I'm an expert on you. I have a PhD on you. I should know exactly how to manage in the best way, Jade. And Jade knows how to manage in the best way, Stan, right? And so we are experts on each other. And therefore, you guarantee my ongoing felt sense of safety and security. In other words, you don't get to decide whether you're doing a good job. I do. I don't get to decide whether I'm doing a good job. You do, right? That's how it works. I don't get to decide whether I was yelling at you. If you felt or heard I was yelling at you, I was, and I apologize for it. That's how in each other's care works. That's how secure relationships work, and that the relationship's more important than being right, right? So that's how we do it. I can also guarantee, or at least assure, your well-being. I'm in charge also of your well-being. I share stock in your body, in your health, right? You do with me as well. Therefore, we're in the foxhole together. We are beholden to each other because our lives depend on each other in terms of safety and security and thriving, because nobody else on the planet has that agreement but you and I. Make sense?
Yeah, it's really beautiful. And I think one of the examples that really stuck out with me in the book was around jealousy. Yeah. And you said that if one partner experiences jealousy, that is a sign of mismanagement by the other. Many would say that the jealous partner is mismanaging themselves and just insecure. And so I love that you brought this example because when it comes to being in each other's care and building up safety, this is huge. So can you go into that some, how that jealousy, because I do think that most people, when they hear about a jealous partner, they just would write them off as insecure or like that's something they need to deal with on their own.
Good is really good point. We have to first understand that our culture is largely island. Don't tread on me. I'm an independent person. I don't need anybody. I'm a self-made person, right? All of these are not true. I have to love myself before I love you, right? You're too needy. You're too sensitive, right? All of these ideas, it's your problem if you're feeling jealous, grow up. All of these things tend to come from the distancing group, these ideas, because if we really understood our nature as human primates, really understood how we actually are, we're much more on the dependent side than anything else. We're herd animals that pair bond in herds, right? And so you and I are a primary attachment system, right? When we enter into a romantic or best friends, or cop car partners, or, you know, in the foxhole together were primaries, right? Because our lives depend on each other. That makes us the same and makes us agree on lots of things, right? So we're thinking we're primaries. If you start to treat a third thing, any thing other than me, with more special consideration, more time, more interest, and I'm left out, relegated to third wheel, or I'm demoted to secondary, not primary, I'm not going to be happy, nor will you. And this is true for people all over the world. It is not culturally dependent. There's something in our psyche that doesn't like intruders to a dyad that's considered primary. So if I'm feeling jealous, more likely than not, you're not doing something to shore up my security by letting me know on a daily basis that I'm your person, I'm one you've chosen, right? You're not doing that. And I'm more sensitive to outside, objects and people and so on. Or you are, in fact, carrying on a relationship that is behind my back. I'm not informed. It is threatening me, competing for resources that would otherwise be mine. And that creates jealousy. It's a triangle. It's a triadic situation. Envy is dyadic. You have something I want. Mirror on the wall, right? Jealousy is someone is taking something I have already. And so we look to the person who, not the third as the problem. The third is usually innocent. We look to the other partner that is mismanaging the thirds that's creating the problem. And this, by the way, is one of the predictors of disillusion in relationships. Especially second marriages and third marriages, because people haven't learned their lesson about this, right? So that's where jealousy comes from. And is it possible that somebody is paranoid or has a, you know, some kind of a paranoid disorder or maybe has tremendous trauma in this area? Yeah, that's definitely possible. But the other partner is still usually implicated in some way.
Yeah. And I think a lot of times when someone is feeling all of these things that you've described, it would sound like, well, they just don't trust their partner then. And I do think that even if you know your partner is of the deepest integrity, I do think it comes down to what you were saying with just truly feeling safe in the relationship and getting those, you said daily. And like, for me, I've always like, that's my style. I need it daily, but it has always felt needy in the past, and almost to me, I feared coming off codependent. So I love that you also brought up the difference between codependency and interdependency, and how we are we're primarily built to mate in this way.
Yes, and codependency really is in one direction only. I'm allowing you to get away with things. I keep doing things for you in hopes you will do it for me, and you don't. And instead of firing you or having a sit down saying, hey, look, we got to talk about this. This is not fair. What do you want in a relationship? Do you want this? Do you want this? No, you don't. Okay, I do love you, but we want different things. It's not going to work.
Yeah.
That takes a lot of courage. And the problem with codependency, and actually all of us, is the attachment system is a biological mandate. A glue that says, I can't quit you. We confuse it with love. And so when it comes to principles above loss, many people go with loss. I cannot lose you. Therefore, I will allow you to take advantage of me. I will take less. I will become under-entitled. I will allow myself to be abused. All of these things because of that biological system of I can't quit you. So we have to rise above that and have to learn to put principles, our beliefs, what we think is right and what we think is best, ahead of loss. Because loss, we're going to have either way. Pick your poison. I would rather go for the principled place because That is what's going to keep us happy, not feelings and emotions. It's principles based on a purpose.
Yeah. Oh, it's all so powerful. And I'm curious with this and how it needs to be a two-way. When one person may be experiencing jealousy or expressing needs for daily, you know, safety or whatever it is, if the other person, even a securely attached person, and they may not have an island attachment style, but just the idea of all of that can sound very controlling to some people. Like they feel like they're being controlled if they're needing to operate in a certain way. How do you make the person feel safe that they're not being, that you're not trying to control them?
Well, the best way is that the way we operate in a free society and get along is that we can't do anything with each other without prior agreement and permission. Mm-hmm. So we have to make agreements. Do we both want to do loving, affectionate, romantic, admiring, appreciative things for each other throughout each day? Do we want to do that? Yeah. Do we want that? Right? Do we want that? Yes. You and I say we do. Okay. So how do you want your affection? How do you want your romance? Right? I need to know how to serve you, right? How you like it. And you need to know how I like it, right? But here's the rub. Then we have to determine, do we do it when we don't feel like it? The answer, if it's purpose-centered, is yes. What if we are mad at each other? The answer is yes. What about if we hate each other? The answer is yes. In all instances, we must do this because that's the purpose. We decided to set the bar there. It must be done, regardless of how we feel. Therefore, it happens. That's better than a poke in the eye. Mm-hmm. And it's the way to a good life together. So I can't feel that I'm being controlled when I signed on to this and I gave you permission to enforce it lest I don't, right? I gave you permission. So I opt for this. To say that I'm being controlled doesn't make sense because, wait a second, I can say to you if you're complaining, wait, you agreed to this. You said you wanted this, right? And you said it was okay for me to tell you when you're not doing it and to do it. Right? What's up with that? Did you change your mind? Oh, no, never mind. Sorry. Okay. So that takes care of that. Mm. That takes care of that. That's why everything is done ahead of time. You and I are constantly co-constructing, molding this thing called a relationship, which only exists in our heads. It's a mythos, a mythology, but it's shared. We decide how this relationship is going to run. Mm-hmm. Based on what we want, not our parents, not some other, you know, talk show host or Oprah or anything else we've read. We're the designers. We're the creators of this thing. So that is how people should look at this. You two sit down and decide, what is this thing called our relationship? What is our culture? What are we going to do? What are we never going to do? So say us both. And if we cannot get on the same page, we may have a deal breaker, right? Where we cannot solve that problem. That's going to be a big deal because maybe we shouldn't be together.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. I hadn't thought of that before, how the fact that there's a choosing actually eliminates the control. Yeah. Mm-hmm. There's consent there because typically someone being controlled, they're not consenting. So that is.
No. Right. Or they forgot. And then you just say, shut up. Great. If you want to change the agreement, we have to have another legislative meeting. But hey, you can't do that in the middle of our operations. So do it, right? Or if it's something where I'm limiting you, we agree to limit each other based on an agreement. Stop it then. It's either stop it or do it. And this gives us license to govern. Remember, we're two bosses because we say so. We've given each other permission, two generals, right? You can only do that by saying so, and therefore we have to work together, right? Mm-hmm. Right? So you do get to tell me what to do, and I do get to tell you what to do based on what we agreed previously to.
Yeah. And a lot of this really comes down to putting the relationship before self. which is a lot of the theme of the book. But that's another thing that I feel has been really threatened in today's culture. Do you think that's because, like you said, we are kind of like an island culture in a way? Or why do you think that like that idea of relationship before self has become like kind of threatened?
If you think about it, we human beings always do better when we believe in something greater than ourselves, whether it's a moral philosophy or whether it's God or whether it's country or whether it's community or religion. But it was at a certain time romantic love. Think Romeo and Juliet, right? That really bothered the church because suddenly we were supplanting God with romantic love, right? I would die for you. And so we've lost that because of our sense of independence and that we don't need anybody. We tell ourselves that all the time. And so there's a great deal of denial, I think, about our biology and about our history and about who we are as animals. And the way we know is by studying babies. Babies are us. Children are us. We're still children. And so we haven't changed that much. We've just learned to adapt more as our brain develops and we're smarter and wiser, hopefully. But when we're under stress, we're a three-year-old again. When we're under stress, we're our primitive selves. We're not so good, actually. And so we have to believe in something greater than ourselves. What better than this co-created mythos called a union? You and I joining ranks, forces, because we can, and we're going to protect each other rabidly. Don't mess with us. You know, we run all the shows. You and I, we're awesome. We're the ice skating team that's going to win the Olympics. We're the band that's going to get a record deal. We're the company that's going to make a lot of money. You know, we're the cop car partners who are going to survive this job, right? And so we have a purpose, a reason for being together, and it cannot be love. It cannot be emotion because emotions come and go. It has to be based on a central purpose where we survive and thrive together. We have each other's backs no matter what, right? Radically devoted to each other's interests and safety and security. It's a social contract, folks. It's been done throughout the history of civilization. And that is what a relationship should be. It's a social contract or set of that's based on terms and conditions because human beings are fundamentally unreliable. I said, we have to have a structure. We have to have rules and principles.
Yeah. And I know the times that we really need to enact that is in conflict. So I'd love to dive into navigating conflict effectively. I know you teach a win-win mindset.
Yes.
And not win-lose. Otherwise, really both are actually losing or you're with someone who feels like a loser, which doesn't feel good for either of them. So for win-win, you have to think of each other always, even when you're reacting. So I'd love to dive into that. Like, how can we always come out as like win-win? And I know one thing that was really new information for me was about how you teach that memory influences state and state influences memory. Yes. So how do we keep this from intensifying our conflicts? Because it definitely happens to me. It's like real quick. It sneaks in there.
Happens to everybody. We're all the same. We're very attuned to any threat cues at all in the environment. And a person is our environment. And not only that, they're very particular threat cues that are based on memory. We're memory animals. Almost everything we do is by memory. Most of our day is fully automatic without thinking. It's all reflex and pattern recognition. Therefore, you look like you're dangerous in this moment by the tilt of your head or the rolling of your eyes. Therefore, I feel threatened by you and I must protect myself from you. I must protect my interests, which makes me quite unfriendly to you. Right? this happens extremely easy. So we have to plan for these things ahead of time before we go live, because these things happen at lightning speeds. Everybody who's been through it knows this is true. Suddenly we're at odds, or suddenly we're at each other's throats. How do we get here? We don't know. But in my In my research, I studied hundreds of couples using digital frame analysis. And that's by watching frame by frame, going forward, slow motion, back slow motion, double speed and so on. You can start to see how we as animals actually operate in real time. And real time is really fast. So we have to learn how our own mind works. We have to learn how easy it is to become a one person thinking individual of me, my, and I. This is a team sport, which means that you and I operating as a two-person psychological system, as we and us, have to think about ourselves and the other at the same time, or we will fight. That's basically the formula. Simple, really hard to do, especially under stress, right? Because we will revert to one-person thinking. So we have to grow up and discipline ourselves to work a different way, understand the potholes of stress and conflict, like talking in a manner that is non-collaborative, that is not cooperative, where instead of working on a problem, you and I work on each other. Mm-hmm. That's a common mistake. And that's always war, right? If you start working on me or try to solve me as the problem, I'm going to try to solve you as the problem. And now we're never going to get out of this, right? Yeah. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is going and referring to the past history. And whenever we do that under stress, we're going to fight over memory. And that's a waste of time because memory sucks. Memory is terrible, always has been, always will be, not reliable. So we keep it to the present and the future. We take the past and we figure out how to solve this problem for the next time together as a we, not a you, right? The other problem is not moving fast enough through conflict. We have to trim the cells, say only the essentials, not get off track, stick to one topic only, always, always, always. And do not allow each other to use the associative mind, which is the memory system. Now that I'm in this state of mind of threat, I remember every time I've been threatened by you, it's going to come up. And another thing, and by the way, that reminds me, deadly in stress, when we're trying to work something out and get out of Dodge and go have lunch, right? These are the things that will delay us, keep us from getting anything, walking away with nothing and feeling more threatened with a relationship that has more interpersonal stress than it did before. So these are understandings, has nothing to do with personage. All human beings will do the same thing, no matter what gender, no matter what sex, all of us act this way under a certain amount of stress. So we have to learn about it and work differently. We would do this if our lives depended on it. So we know that if you and I were in a three-legged race and we wanted to win, we couldn't do most of what we do because we wouldn't win. We would have to work together or we wouldn't work. If we were living in Ukraine, God forbid, and bullets are flying over us, most of the things that we fight about here, we'd never fight about. We have more important things to do. We have to hold together. We have to stay alive. We don't do that, right? And so it's a whole different ball game when the context is survival. And unfortunately, couples do not understand that this is not a luxury. This is a necessity. Your lives actually do depend on each other. I could prove that. You could too if you just paid attention. Your health, your creativity, your prosperity, your well-being, your happiness, all of that depends on whether the two of you play well together. And if you don't, nobody cares. You just won't make it. You just won't go anywhere. You just won't create anything. You will never solve problems. And everybody will see that. And so, including your kids. So this is a necessary thing that couples need to do. And unfortunately, it is not in our culture. There is no leadership in this culture. Everyone gets into love relationships for their own particular reasons based on their own ideas and expectations and entitlements and we all suffer the consequences because of that.
I'm so excited to tell you about Paleo Valley Beef Sticks, which are one of the healthiest snacks on the market. I tend to not like beef jerky type snacks because they're usually so dry, but these are so juicy and full of flavor. I've been upping my protein for my overall health and physique, so I have zero guilt snacking on these. And because it's a protein snack, I feel fuller in between meals. They are also a great environmental snack choice because they're 100% grass-fed and finished, sourced from small domestic farms that contribute to regenerative agriculture. I feel good doing my part to put an end to inhumane factory farms that negatively impact the environment by the food I choose to purchase. Also, almost every meat snack on the market is made with a processing agent called encapsulated citric acid in order to have a long shelf life, but ECA can cause a ton of health issues. Paleo Valley Beef Sticks uses fermentation instead to give the beef sticks a long shelf life without harmful acids and chemicals, and fermentation is great for gut health. They're also only flavored with organic spices. I'm telling you guys, when you unwrap these, it's like literally juice comes out of the wrapper. That's how juicy and just flavorful these things are. You'll love them. Head over to paleovalley.com/jade for 15% off your first order. That's paleovalley.com/jade. paleovalley.com/jade for 15% off your first order. Now on with the show.
Yeah, that's so true. I know that if I'm feeling drained from conflict, I can't create anything, and I'm definitely not feeling playful. So it has always surprises me when I see you write about how conflict needs to be really short. I think you say 5 or 15 minutes, because I'm always like, what? It takes like a day, maybe sometimes two, to figure this out.
Never, 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 never. You want to keep the stressful talks short, to the point where you get to some kind of solution for now that works for both of you. And then you kiss and you love each other and you move to another activities, something else. You want to reduce the time you're in stress relationally, not because of your work, but relationally, right? Because the relationship has to be relatively low stress, no threat, because you're going to need those resources for the real threat and stress, which is outside, right? That's the world that does not care about you, that is fickle, that is opportunistic. When the chips are down, all you have are the two of you by agreement. And so this has to be thought in a different way. It's a different orientation of good for me, good for you, because that's how we roll. And so we're constantly having to think about what's going to work for both of us. And we limit our solutions to that. That sharpens our ability to think this way. We'll do it faster and faster every time, and it's worth it. And it is hard to do, but it's not an idealism. We've been doing it forever.
You think it's like a skill that's learned over time? Like at first, that maybe it does. And then over time, when you become more of an expert at your partner and you're learning that your memory is influencing the situation, then it becomes the shorter. Cause I honestly, most couples I know, they do take a while. So I'm guessing that most of us are still going off of our memory.
We could play something if you want. You have a scenario. Okay. We could play. Okay. That's sometimes the best thing to do. So come up with some kind of scenario.
Well, we can use the example in your book that I felt like I got really activated listening to, where a woman was with a man who would go out to lunch with a previous partner but not invite her, and he would take the phone calls from her in another room. And it's cool in your audiobook, you actually hear the dialogues and then you say what they could have done better. So maybe we can use that as an example because it's fresh in my mind.
Okay, so I'm the person who is jealous or feels threatened, right? And so I could yell at you. I could yell at you and do all of that stuff. That is just going to be threatening. And you're going to respond to my yelling. You don't care about the content, because once I'm threatening, I can't influence you. Once you're threatened, I cannot influence you. So that's a bad strategy. So what I could say is, let's have a sit down. You and I, do you think that the best idea for us as a couple, as an alliance, that you and I, the relationship, this relationship, should it come first above and beyond other people? What do you think? Mm-hmm. And let's say you say, no, I don't think it should. I think our freedom, ourselves, our own growth, our ability to do whatever we want comes first. And then maybe our career. The relationship. Well, if I believe that the relationship must come first, that's my idea of the relationship I want. That's an alliance for me for a lifetime. I might say no deal. That's a no deal. Because you're operating under a different idea than I am, right? You have a right to do that. You have a right to live your life any way you want. That's not the way I want. We're pointing in two different directions. That's called a deal breaker. But let's say you agree with me. Yeah, I think that would be a good idea. And the reason we want to put each other first is because everyone is depending on us to be happy and in good order. Otherwise, everyone else suffers around us. We're a bummer to be around, right? Okay, yes. Plus, if we're not good, is anything else really good? Our work? Because we're lowering our resources. So we've made the argument. Okay, there we go. All right, now I want to talk about thirds. You have somebody that you spend time with, and that throws me under the bus. That's being cloaked. That's not teamwork. That is not making me our relationship the most important thing, not me, but our relationship. And therefore, fix it. Fix it now. I don't know what you want to come up with, but we can come up with it together, but it must be fixed now because it's threatening to me. And that does not go along with what we just said. Mm-hmm. If the relationship comes first and you're doing something that's threatening to me, I've got to take care of it. Right? So this is a long-winded way of demonstrating not what necessarily the average person would say, mm-hmm. but you first find where you agree and where you are the same, and you work your way downward to that problem. You want apples, I want oranges, we fight. Okay, one of us gets smart and goes, hey, do we both want fruit? And we say, yeah. Okay, what are we fighting about? You can have, we want fruit, we were the same. Yeah, we agree. You can have oranges, I'll take apples, as you wish, right? And it's like, we're pretty dumb as creatures here. And we're lazy. And so we do the simplest thing, which is to find where we disagree and where we're different. That's our nature of xenophobia, by the way. We otherize that which we can't manage, right? I can't handle you. You're too different than I am. I don't understand you. I otherize you. I call you a borderline, a narcissist, a codependent. I call you any name that I can because basically I just don't know how to work you. That's basically it. Yeah. And I can't find, because I don't think about where we're the same. And we are. All we have to do is look for it, right?
Yeah, it's interesting how in those scenarios of the two different types of conversations, you use the word freedom in the first one. It's interesting how some people would feel more freedom in that scenario of just, okay, well, then we're done. And then other people would feel more freedom in the second scenario where they figure it out together and then there's more freedom through.
Yes, because we both want to be free. You're not the only person who wants freedom. I want freedom too. Just I don't want your freedom to step on my rights or to step on my sensibilities, nor should you want that. So we have to come up thoughtfully with a plan that works for both of us. So we're both safe and secure, and we're both as free as we can be. Win-win.
Yeah.
And again, that's a collaborative effort. Everyone can do it. You just have to start to think this way. Otherwise, you will continue to just take care of your own interests. And that is too unfair, too unjust, too insensitive, and your relationship won't last.
Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. So one last thing on the conflict, navigating conflict.
Oh, and by the way, this is always done when sober. By sober, By sober, I mean when neither of you are influenced by adrenal, chemicals or products. That means when you are just fighting or you just came off a fight. No, you do this when you're calm, relaxed, everything's copacetic. Mm. Let's talk about the next time. What are we going to do to prevent this? What are we going to do to make this happen? Since we both want this, right? That's how you do it. Mm-hmm. And then you predict what could go wrong the next time, plan for it and prepare for it. That's how you do everything.
Yeah. Emotionally sober. Yeah. So to close off the navigating conflict, one thing that was really big for me that you talked about was eye contact, how it keeps attunement, and how when you lower your eyes, you go into your head, which goes into the memories and the static pictures of your partner based off the state that you're in. Because for me, when I am in conflict, I have a very hard time with eye contact. So I want to bring that up because it's when you're making eye contact with someone, there is something that causes you to remember who they are.
Yeah. So here's what I tell people. It's all tactical. It's not personal. Mm-hmm. I'm holding eye contact with you during conflict because I need to track you and I need to see my impact on you every time I talk. Otherwise, it's suicidal. So let's say you and I are on a tight wire and we're facing each other and our lives depend on balance. Think of that as staying safe and secure. Balance. So would it make sense for me to wander off my eyes and not look at you? I'm going to get off balance and you're going to get off balance with me and we both fall. Therefore, I have to watch you carefully, tactically, in order to keep myself safe, right? Because everything I do is going to have an impact on you. And if it starts to make you feel unsafe, I have an interest to return you to safety because once you feel that way, I cannot influence you. I will get nothing. Same with you. So it is all strategic, tactical, and that's why you both should do it. Not across the room, not on the phone, because we're visual animals, we error correct through the visual field, and never on text, never in email. Please don't ever do that, because we're going to visualize our partner in our heads, and if state of mind is angry, what am I going to see? A static picture of Jade in my head, angry and bitter, or mean or uncaring or dismissive, whatever it is, right? And so these are things you want to be face-to-face because we're legally blind on the sides. And the fear centers of our brain trigger more rapidly when we see a face at a glance. That's the other reason, right? And so if you want to be smart and you want to understand how to get in and out of this thing quickly, do the things that I'm recommending. Not because they're polite, but because you want to get something accomplished with the least amount of damage. Yeah. You know, get out of Dodge, get to something good for me, good for you. Let's go eat.
Yeah. Thank you. That's something I'm really, really working up to. And it makes all the difference. I notice right when I make eye contact, I remember who's in front of me.
Tracy and I just went through this. We just came back and we were doing a mini retreat, so to speak. And we were tired and irritable from the travel and everything. And so we got into a little scrap last night after telling people we don't fight anymore. And I guess I can say that, but we did. It was a little thing over unpacking. And so what we do, we have principles that things that we have to do. We can go to bed angry, but we have to at least touch toes, right? Mm. That takes care of it. That takes care of it because all we need to know after a fight is that we're okay. I may be angry with you, but we're okay. That's all we need to relax and to sleep well. So we do that. But we also apologize, fall on our swords almost immediately. And that takes care of it as well. So there are things in place that we agree to that we must do, not because we feel like it, but we decided it's the best or right thing we could do, even though it will be the hardest thing to do because it's the best. And that's what we hold to, and that's what makes us awesome.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I love that touching toes. That would let me go to sleep, so.
It does. It works, folks. That's all you have to do. Touch is an unequivocal sign of friendliness.
Yeah.
And biologically, it lets us relax and go, okay, we're okay. We're okay, right?
Yeah.
And the anger drops and all of it drops. Usually, sometimes, nothing needs to even be resolved.
Yes.
So that's the repair that people must do. And that is really essential. People learn the art of falling on your sword. I'm sorry, you're right. I shouldn't have done that. That was wrong. Full stop.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing after that.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Yeah.
No, I did that because you, but or what about what you did? Or I did this because none of that. Mm-hmm. If you really want to learn how to be, a character-driven, high integrity person who's doing the right thing when it's the hardest, you fall on your sword completely without justification, and that's it. And then you watch what happens. Generally, the other person does the same.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how it works. I fall on the sword, not because I need to be right, but because I value this union, this relationship. It's more important than anything else. That's why I do it. Of course, you're going to do it too.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you. So I end the show with a lightning round of three questions or like one sentence each, but I was hoping before that we could just, if we could close off with just a couple of ways to become an expert of your partner so that they can really feel in our care.
So I watch you, Jade. I observe you just like I would in my career, which I chose. I chose you. You're going to save my life perhaps one day. I need to know all things about you because that means we're going to be able to handle any problem, create anything without getting into a land war. Therefore, I have to know how to handle you in all your different states of mind without using a stick or a whip. That takes practice, just as if you were, and I hate it, it sounds pejorative, I don't mean it that way, an animal that I chose to live with me. I've got to learn the animal, right? I can't impose myself on the animal, right? So so I have to learn you, which is a trial and error thing, right? You have to do that with me. So I'm curious. I watch you. I pay attention to when you are difficult for me. And I practice different ways of working with you so that you're not difficult for me. I need to do that because the more I feel that I'm incompetent with you, the more I dislike you. That's mm-hmm. human nature. We don't like things we can't manage or handle. And mm-hmm. so when I do feel I am able to be really good at Jade, I'm good at Jade. Not only do I love Jade and enjoy Jade for that because I feel masterful, but also Jade feels that finally there's somebody who's able to handle her without pushing her away, dismissing her, judging her, getting angry with her, leaving her, right? Win-win again. So we often don't think we should do this, yet we must, right? If we were cop car partners, I'm going to learn everything about you. First, we're on stakeouts. We have a lot of time. Plus, you're going to save my life. And I need to know your weak spots. I need to know who you are because I need to handle you. What if you freeze someday? What if something happens? I need to know how you roll. My life depends on it. So again, love relationships are the only unions that do not have a reason for being, stated purpose, stated vision for where they're going. They do not have a co-created architecture or a co-created culture. The only union that does not have a reason to come on board based on terms and conditions. And that's why they don't last mostly across the globe, because all other unions do have a purpose. let's start a band. We're going to play this music. We're going to go here. You're going to get this pay. We're going to have this culture of treating each other this way. Are you in? Yes, I'm in. Good. Right? It's not because we're in love. It's because of what we're going to do and what we're not going to do. Terms and conditions. That is what protects love. That is what leads to earned love, not the kind that comes and goes like gas. Right? You cannot rely on that. Why? Because we don't think we should. We have a lot of expectations in romantic love. We have a lot of entitlements that go all the way back to family. And because we automate each other very early, we think we know each other and we feel like we can do anything we want because we believe we're family. And that's an illusion. We're not. We'll never be. We are strangers constantly, continually trying to get to know each other because that is what we do as time travelers, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's a different way of thinking. It's a different culture of we-ism, us-ism. You do not lose yourself this way. This is not about losing your autonomy. Two fully autonomous, fully independent creatures coming together based on terms and conditions, a purpose, vision, all that stuff. Our differences, if we accept them, is our superpower. Our superpower, not something we complain about, right? We'll always be irritating. We'll always be annoying. We'll always be disappointing. We'll always be contradictory. So what? What we don't want is to be threatening ever. And we don't want to act in a way that's unfair, unjust, because that is suicide. That will come back and bite us. So it's a different way of thinking. But if you were in special forces in the military, if you didn't operate this way, you wouldn't get it.
Yeah.
You're not important. The people to your left and right are more important than you because they're going to save your life. That's the culture they're creating there. And that's how troops actually keep each other alive. So same with partners.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
You're so welcome. It's my favorite topic. And
yeah.
And I live it. I can attest to it. It is hard, but it's worth it. And it's a practice.
Yeah. It's so beautiful when someone can say, this is my lived experience. I know this works. Yeah. So thank you for that embodiment.
Much as anybody else, maybe more, I do it.
Yeah. Thank you. So there's a few short questions we ask everyone who comes on the show. The first one is, if you could hug your younger self right now, what would you say?
You are so normal. You're fine, just the way you are. I am so sorry that you feel so exposed and so vulnerable and so lonely and so odd. You're perfect the way you are.
Mm, beautiful. If you could have the whole world read one book, which would it be?
Oh gosh. Oh my God. Charlotte's Web.
Oh, I love that.
Friendship.
Yeah. About friendship. Oh.
Friendship with something that you would think otherwise would be disgusting.
If you could whisper one phrase to everyone on the planet, what would it be?
Relationship is everything. It's what you're going to care the most about at the end. So don't fuck it up. Right? Say what you need to say now because the person that you love could be gone tomorrow and you don't want to regret.
Thank you. Lastly, how can people connect with you? I know you have the Pact Retreats. So how do they sign up for that and find you online?
So people can find me and my wife, Tracy, and all of us at thepactinstitute.com. That's the, as in the, Pact, P-A-C-T, institute.com. This started off for training therapists in a psychobiological approach to couple therapy, which is my approach. But we also serve the public. We do retreats all around the world. We're coming up. We're doing one in Portugal. Next year, it's a 5-star retreat. It's wonderful. We're limiting it to, I think, 18 people. Wow. But my wife and I do couple workshops. We can't call them retreats because they're online. couple workshops throughout the year, two of them at a time, at the same time, staggered. And so I highly recommend those.
Oh, awesome. Okay, I'm going to look into that workshop. Thank you so much. Again, I know I said it at the top of the show when you first came on, but I'm really thankful for your work. I know that it empowers so many people to be able to just feel that they have the tools and the knowledge to relate in ways that weren't modeled for them. So really thankful for all the research you've done and all the embodiment that you hold.
You're not too needy. You're perfect as you are. You're just like me. I'm very clingy myself. You need to find somebody who's willing to play the same game you are.
Yeah. I believe I have. Thank you so much. And I had to learn so much along the way. And a big part of that was your work. So thank you. Thank you so much.
It sounds like you were with people who had really different interests than you.
Yeah.
That's why I tell people, dream your relationship, not your person. Make a list of what the perfect relationship is that you want, not the perfect person, because nobody is, and screen people out who are not willing to play along.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you. It means a lot, coming from you, especially, you saying that you're clingy too and all of that. It means a lot.
I was an island most of my life. And then with Tracy, she pulled me in to secure. And islands often go through waves as they develop towards secure, developmentally. And so I'm definitely like, where are you going? Why aren't you here? Don't go, please. Right. And so, yeah.
Yeah. Well, beautiful. I think it likely deepened your work on, like you said, it's something that you've experienced yourself, and it's made it to where you're able to understand these styles and these needs in ways that are really relatable. So,
how old are you, may I ask?
38. I'll be 39 in like 2 months.
Happy birthday.
Thank you.
You're a puppy. So yeah. I'm glad you're in the relationship you want to be.
Yeah.
Just hold the line. Whatever lines the two of you decide, gotta hold it without fail. Otherwise, you won't be credible. So.
Mm, yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure to meet you, Jade.
Thank you. All right, you guys. Okay, so I want to touch on two things just as like practical examples and little pragmatic ways you can use Dr. Stan Tackin's approach. So we didn't get into microcommunications, but he kind of talked about it a little bit. And one thing that I felt and was one thing I noticed pretty much right away about my partner in the beginning that caused a lot of safety for me, just because I was like, wow, you have to be really present to be able to communicate in this way. But Dr. Stan Tackin teaches micro communications and how micro communications build up safety in relationship. So a micro communication is the way you communicate in the small moments and the moments that most would see as meaningless. So if you're cuddling a partner and you're going to get up and go get water, or you're going to get up and go to the bathroom, whatever, you don't just get up and just walk away. You say, I'm going to go get water, or I'm going to run to the restroom. I'll be right back. And it's just that there's a level of presence that comes with micro communication that causes so much safety in the relationship. Another example is like, being really present when you're making love, and say you guys know you both have to work that morning, and it's, you know, you're having your morning making love little session, and you're having to be conscious of time instead of just looking at your phone or looking up at, like, looking away from the person you're making love to, your partner, looking away and looking across the room. You actually say, I'm just going to check the time for us really quick. And doing that instead of just pulling your gaze and your attention away from the person you're being intimate with, it creates this level of safety and intimacy. Just like I said, because there's a deep presence there, because if you're not present, you're not going to be able to communicate in that way. You're not going to be able to do the micro communications because you're not even fully there. And you see that so much. And when someone glances, you know, looks over at their phone when a partner's talking to them. Like, those are the other type of micro communications that can cause a lack of safety, a lack of security in the relationship. So that's one example. And then there's something else he said that I wanted to share. Expert. Okay. So he talked about being an expert at your part of your partner. I think that it's so powerful to know your partner's relationship style, of course, and their relationship history and their inner child woundings. I know with my partner, we know our inner child's core wounds. And so we know how to stay tender to those in conflict. So, and I've posted about this on Instagram, but if my wound is being abandoned, then he knows that in conflict, I'm not trying to control him by getting him to not abandon me. I have an inner child need there. And so that allows him to be sensitive to that. I know his need is his inner child wound as well. And I can be sensitive to that. So that's another way to be an expert at your partner. One thing that I thought was really cool in our team meeting, like two team meetings ago, was he asked me to write down my hormonal cycle. So my follicular, my ovulation, my luteal, and my menstruation, right? Like, to write all four down and to write down what I need for each cycle. When it comes to, do I need more sleep? Do I need more rest? Do I need more outings? And then specifically, how can he reassure me in each of those? And I noticed, wow, it's in my menstruation that I actually start to doubt the relationship, or start to doubt that I'm safe, at least. And I start to want to ask, like, are you sure you love me? Are you sure? Like, all of those things, or I start to feel insecure about, you know, whatever. And that's stronger during that time. So me knowing that, becoming a better expert at myself, and then I can share that with him and he can be a better expert as well. And just, he knows, okay, she's in this time of her hormonal season, her hormonal cycle, and I can be sensitive to this. So this is how we become experts of our partners, in little practical, little pragmatic ways. I wanted to share those. They've been really big blessings for me and my relationship. Okay, so I'm going to thank the affiliates. My site, jade-bryce.com, is where you can sign up for any of my workshops or my women's program or for one-on-one coaching. And then under that link, you'll see paleovalley.com/jade. I love every single one of their products. I love what they've done for my hair, my skin, my muscles, the way that it's helped me form my physique. It's completely different when I was working out without these supplements. So check that out, paleovalley.com/jade. They have all types of supplements. Also, they have really yummy snacks. So check that out. And then underneath that link, there is a link for a cock worship course. I think it's a beautiful way for us to heal our relationship to our own genitals and to our partner's genitals. I think it's healing for both of us. And it's a beautiful way to worship our partner, worship each other. So that's a wonderful course that I've taken myself. And then under that is Gene Keys. That will take you to the dream course about how to use your dreams for realization, but for self-realization. But there's also, if you use that link to go to his course on love or prosperity, the show will get a small cut on anything that you purchase. And his prices are very reasonable. Under that is Pleasure Wand and Yoni Eggs. These are all links in the show notes. And it's wands, WAANDS.com. Code Jade gets you a discount on any product. I love the cervical wand and the jade egg. Those are pretty much required tools in most of my courses and workshops. They are beautiful altar items, but they are thing that I'm teaching tomorrow for my women's program is how to use the jade egg and pair it with ovarian breath work. It's a really powerful tool for pelvic strengthening, for de-armoring, for better orgasms. Just, there's so many benefits to these tools. So check that out at wands, WAANDS.com. And then all things infrared at higherdose.com. My favorite is the infrared face mask. I can wear it just when I'm watching something. I can wear it when I'm reading. It's easy. It's mobile. And then I love my sauna blanket as well, because my hair is actually not getting damaged by the heat because it's just a blanket. But it's, all of their products are great. And I love the women who run the company. Thank you so much, guys, for tuning in and being on this journey with me. One way you can support the show is by supporting these affiliates, because it is how this show does have expenses, and this helps to bring in income for those expenses. And then another way you can support the show is to leave a review or share an episode with a friend. If someone crossed your mind while you were listening to the show, it's likely that they would benefit from the information. So send it along. You can also join me on Instagram at Untamed and Unashamed Podcast. As always, be a light, stay open, and remember, you belong here. But we got what it takes for the circle to break. Revolution lives in me. I belong. I belong. I
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.